Jersey.
And we just have 20 seconds, Sophia, but the latest on Mumia Abu-Jamal, who had COVID.
Yes, Mumia also contracted COVID-19 inside the prison. And it's a clear indication, as we talked about earlier, about the lack of social distancing and the lack of adequate health care for incarcerated people. And I hope and pray that Mumia survives.
Sophia Elijah, I want to thank you so much for being with us, Executive Director of the Alliance of Families for Justice. That does it for our show. A very happy birthday to Mike Burke, and a fond farewell to Libby Rainey, our producer, who, well, we have traveled all over from the firefighting prison camps in Northern California to the border, to those long train rides between Washington, D.C. at the last minute in New York, and wherever a UN climate summit is in the world. Your compassion, your humor, and your intelligence will be missed. And fond farewell and best of luck in law school. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks so much for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. The time is 7:59 a.m. At 8 o'clock, we've got Wednesday Talk Radio with Paul Rowland.
And good morning, everybody. This is Paul Rowland talking at you from my home here in southeast Portland on a bright and shiny spring day where I am. I imagine where most of you listening are. If you're listening by terrestrial radio, if you're listening by internet, who knows where you might be and what it might be doing. But anyway, yeah, spring has sprung. I don't know. I don't know if it's the COVID and being kind of so socially isolated, cooped up, but yet depending so heavily on getting out for my solo hikes up on Mount Tabor or Powell Butte. I feel for you who aren't able to do that, because that's a crucial outlet for me. But anyway, I don't know if it's that's making me appreciate and realize the coming of spring more than I usually do. And like I don't know, just going up to Mount Tabor the other day after, I don't know, just a few days, I hadn't been to that particular spot, and seeing these just four gorgeous flowering trees above the upper west side reservoir, just bursting. Of course, it was much more dramatic since it was a bright, sunny day. Anyway, I hope you all are appreciating the arrival of spring. We got to appreciate the good things in life as we negotiate our way through, hopefully, the tail end of this global COVID pandemic, which I would like to talk about on the show today. I haven't talked much about that. I'm by myself, as you can tell, and the number to call in is 503-231-8187. There's a whole lot of aspects of COVID, from the very, small and personal, like individual vaccinations, like I got last week, my first poke, to the very big, the whole issue of globalization and global travel, which leads to this pandemic, and of course the origins of the pandemic, which is now the open discussion of the Wuhan lab hypothesis, which of course the WHO report has downplayed or said is not likely, but it has come out since 60 Minutes featured 60 Minutes and well, they actually took it from the CNN special doctors, COVID doctors speak out, which I watched a bunch of, where Robert Redfield, former CDC head, actually gave his opinion that he thinks that's what caused it. So we can go into all those things and more. I kind of wanted to start out. The Derek Chauvin trial is going on. I've caught little bits and pieces of it. I don't know if you all have been following that. It seems as if it's kind of difficult to watch, with the defense focusing on the what they say is the people who are watching horrified as the Chauvin slowly and horrendously choked George Floyd to death by kneeling on him, that they those people distracted him, which is what I guess caused him to just stay there for 9 minutes and 29 seconds. And trying to discredit the individual witnesses by saying, I don't know, they called the cop names basically as it went on, and they realized that he was killing them and they were feeling hopeless. I mean, I guess they could have charged the police and risked getting shot or whatever. But anyway, it's a... The testimony themselves, I've seen that, has been very... very dramatic. Some of the young people who aren't being shown on video, their testimony, the martial arts expert guy who testified. But anyway, I just got a little snippet on my Facebook feed that I thought kind of sums it up, maybe for those of you who haven't been following it. After 2 days of testimony in the Chauvin trial, here's what we learned. The dispatch officers watching a live video of the arrest were so upset by what they were seeing that they called the cops on themselves. A passerby with a background in wrestling and MMA, sorry, I don't have that, what that is, but took one look at the scene and immediately recognized the danger to Floyd's life and pleaded with the cops to check on him and get off his neck. The cop's response was, "Don't do drugs." A 9-year-old girl saw what was happening and understood she was witnessing a death. Today, almost a year later, she is still traumatized by the memory and feels guilty that she couldn't do more to help Floyd. Sidebar, the things this country does to young black girls is infuriating. A passerby who is a firefighter and EMT witnessed the incident and immediately recognized that they were killing him. She identified herself as an EMT, begged them repeatedly to check Floyd's pulse, and in response, Chauvin pulled his pepper spray and aimed it at her. The defense wants us to believe that Floyd was simultaneously a huge, scary, dangerous black man who could not be subdued by four officers, while he was also so delicate and fragile he just happened to drop dead of other causes while the officers were kneeling on him. The judge is heavily favoring the defense and has chastised several prosecution witnesses harshly for pushing back on the defense's framing of questions. So, I've introduced one possible topic of conversation that is dominating the news, and rightfully so, because it last summer attracted this first intense local in Minneapolis response by people on the ground and in waves around the country and around the world, and has continued to evoke a massive response. And so the outcome, and as I'll just say my opinion, should have been foreordained that he got some sort of murder charge. A lot of people are feeling he might actually get off, which I guess to a lot of people who have observed these things or been victims of this sort of thing over the years and decades won't find surprising, but still should be of great concern. So I want to mention that. So let's talk about COVID. As I said, I did go get poked last week, and I don't know. Have people had trouble? I'm not the best person to negotiate technology, which those of you know. I gave up my folk music show because I was unable to adapt to the, which was basically just my own ineptness. But to the doing things remotely and producing my show. But anyway, so everything's going computer with a COVID, so that's a big part of it. But yeah, I tried to sign both myself and my 90-year-old mother up, and I somehow got myself signed up, but not her, because I guess I was using the same email address, and she doesn't really use email anymore, and I guess that messed up the system. But I have since succeeded, and she is going to get vaccinated in a couple weeks. So have you all got vaccinated? Have you had any reactions? Have you had trouble? What's been your experience? We can certainly talk about that. That is a major thing that's happening to us all, and seems to be the only way that we're going to get over this thing faster rather than slower. We could just wait for more hundreds of thousands of people in the U.S. and millions of people around the world to die until we achieve the elusive herd immunity. Or we could go along with this admittedly a little scary, a little new RNA-based vaccine, but it seems like it's something that hasn't had major complications. I had a sore arm for a bit over a day, nothing more than that. I hear the second vaccination tends to provoke sometimes more reactions. So I want to put that out there. I did want to mention, yes, the Wuhan lab hypothesis. I had checked out an article by Nicholas Baker recently, actually from January 4th of this year, in the New York Magazine, which I must say is a source of some really, really great in-depth writing on everything from climate change to COVID to many other things. So the title of the article is The Lab Leak Hypothesis. For decades, scientists have been hotwiring viruses in hopes of preventing a pandemic, not causing one. But what if? And so I looked a little bit into Nicholas Baker. I know this is a very, this is a very fraught subject. You know, last week we talked about the rise in hate crimes and hate rhetoric and harassment of Asian Americans, which seems to arise a lot out of the Trump framing of the coronavirus as the so-called China flu, or he used other colorful names for it, and provoking in his already highly provoked base these increase of just insane, I hate to use that word, but incidents of like targeting a 65-year-old Philippine American woman, I think that was in New York just the other day, by some dude just walking by. I mean, what a man, beating up on an older lady. I mean, and then the security guards just standing by and watching. I hope if I was there, I would have run and actually physically intervened. I hope I don't have to witness such things, but I hope if I do, I am up to the human task of actually physically intervening, and you know, you could, they could have called the police. But anyway, that's the kind of thing that's happening. And again, it seems to be so. So yes, it is a fraught issue. We don't want to, you know, demonize another country because they happen to be the source for a global pandemic. After all, in 1918, we don't absolutely know, but it seems as if the pandemic, the flu, which was called the Spanish flu, actually originated in Kansas, which, as we know, is in the very center of the good old United States of America. So, you know, these things can and do arise just about anywhere. And we can get into some of the various hypotheses. But, you know, and another thing is, you know, if it did happen to leak from the lab in Wuhan, it wouldn't be the first time there have been any number of different kinds of industrial accidents that have caused widespread misery and suffering and death, you know, from nuclear to chemical to even biological. And I noticed, getting back to Nicholas Baker, the author of this article on the lab leak hypothesis, which, as I said, has come back into a real public discussion, especially since Redfield, the ex-head of the CDC, openly gave vent to his opinion that it was likely came from a leak at the Wuhan lab. So I noticed that earlier last year, I guess, he released a book called Baseless, My Search for Secrets in the Ruins of the Freedom of Information Act, which was largely talked about many things, including the ruins of the Freedom of Information Act, or the difficulty of actually making that very bold and very far-reaching act actually work the way it could, if it actually was able to, and not continually resisted by the cloak of secrecy of various branches of government. Anyway, in an article, How the U.S. Covered Up Its Germ Warfare Program, in Huffington Post of July of last year, he talks about exactly that, how the United States had a germ warfare program, which quite possibly they actually experimented with on the ground in the Korean War, going back to Asia. So yes, there's many, many strands. So, you know, even if the most unlikely scenario, which I don't actually believe, that it was actually an engineered virus that then was intentionally released, which seems incredibly far-fetched. I mean, that would the layers of far-reaching strategic thinking that would have to go into that just boggle the mind, that they would actually release it on their own population, knowing that it would spread around the world and do more damage to other, I don't know. I don't even want to go there. But even if that was a possibility, the U.S. basically started germ warfare. So this whole, you know, it goes back to, you know, the Cold War and all the horrible things that came out of the Cold War, and that's a big subject. But getting back to Wuhan and Nicholas Baker, who, as I said, basically he was led to the writing about the possibility that it was actually a leak from the Wuhan lab by his going down the rabbit hole of trying to actually get to the bottom of the U.S. germ warfare program in the 50s, 60s, 70s, and who knows until when. And in this book, he wrote Baseless, My Search for Secrets in the Ruins of the Freedom of Information Act, which I said is discussed in this article in Huffington Post and many other places after he released that book. Be interesting to have him on the air. I just started thinking about this in the last couple of days, so I didn't make any attempts to reach out to him, but I might just do that in the upcoming weeks. So I can't start reading from this article and go too deep into the U.S. germ warfare, although it's relevant. Let me just go to this, start reading a little bit from this article before I check in and see if anybody, we do have Art on the phone. Let me just, Art, just hold on a second. I just want to at least get to one of the threads that I started mentioning. So flask monsters. What happened was fairly simple, I've come to believe. It was an accident. A virus spent some time in a laboratory, and eventually it got out. SARS-CoV-2, the virus that causes COVID-19, began its existence inside a bat. Then it learned how to infect people in a claustrophobic mine shaft. And then it was made more infectious in one or more laboratories, perhaps as part of a scientist's well-intentioned but risky effort to create a broad-spectrum vaccine. SARS-2 was not designed as a biological weapon, but it was, I think, designed. Many thoughtful people dismiss this notion, and they may be right. They sincerely believe that the coronavirus arose naturally, zoonotically, from animals without having been previously studied or hybridized or sluiced through cell cultures or otherwise worked on by trained professionals. They hold that a bat carrying a coronavirus infected some other creature, perhaps a pangolin, and that the pangolin may have already been sick with a different coronavirus disease, and out of the conjunction and commingling of those two diseases within the pangolin, a new disease, highly infectious to humans, evolved. I will just in parentheses say that seems to be the main hypothesis credited by the recent WHO report coming out of their highly controlled visit to China, and you know, it's quite possibly, maybe most likely that is, but there, as part of the public discussion of this other hypothesis, I just thought I would do some due diligence and talk about that. So back to this article, I'll just finish this paragraph before we get to our first caller, Art. Or they hypothesized that two coronaviruses recombined in a bat, and this new virus spread to other bats, and then the bats infected a person directly in a rural setting, perhaps, and that this person caused a simmering, undetected outbreak of respiratory disease, which over a period of months or years evolved to become virulent and highly transmissible, but was not noticed until it appeared in Wuhan. There is no direct evidence for these zoonotic possibilities, just as there is no direct evidence for an experimental mishap. No written confession, no incriminating notebook, no official accident report. Certainty craves detail, and detail requires an investigation. It has been a full year, 80 million people have been infected, and surprisingly, no public investigation has taken place. We still know very little about the origins of this disease. This was written before the WHO released their report after their visit to China. But yeah, I'm not an expert on this. I can't speak authoritatively, but it's true that there is no... They did not find any serious concrete evidence for any of their hypotheses. There's no outbreak in southern China where these bat colonies are that they think that originated it, that somehow led eventually to the wet market in Wuhan, which led to the outbreak. There doesn't seem to be a real trail of patterns of outbreaks either in animals or humans that is known, but it does seem like the Chinese have not really done their own really thorough investigation, and it seems like they could have possibly come up with something like that trail had they done that. So it does lead one to think that they, just as, you know, the United States secrecy cloaked departments of whatever have it possibly something to hide. They certainly suppressed whistleblowers at the time of the outbreak. They suppressed a lot of information. And I think that, you know, this is a huge deal, this COVID-19 pandemic for the entire planet. And I think it deserves much more of a serious treatment. So anyway, all that said, the number is 503-231-8187. Let's go to our first caller. If you are still with us, Art, go ahead.
Okay. Good morning there, Paul.
Good morning.
All right. It just occurs to me that the pandemic we shouldn't expect for it to end even within a year. And I say that not, I don't know, sarcastically or most fearfully, but because I don't think we should go back to business as usual. That is, if we were actually to rid the world of the way it's impacted the way we live, our culture, to assume that we can continue on in the direction that we're going, we're not looking at a sustainable future. And I think that the impact that it's had, of course, is dreadful and horrible worldwide, and especially the deaths and the... Are you still with me there, Paul?
Well, of course, but could you maybe spell that out a little more? I mean, I could guess where you're going with that, but what do you mean by that we need to change the course that we're on?
Oh. Okay. Well, the course that we're on is environmental degradation around the world that could result in crisis and catastrophes and you know, dread, horrible storms around the world and a dysfunctional economy in worse conditions. Going back to business as usual is just not going to happen one way or the other. But if we can look at the way that we had to address remaining, you know, distances and taking care not to spread, allow the disease to spread, we could change our culture, we could change our economy, we could change the direction we take to deal with modern society as it is falling apart. And
obviously we've been struggling. People have been struggling in different ways for decades and years and centuries, and we don't seem to have slowed down the juggernaut a whole hell of a lot.
Well, the modern industrial era has reached a point in the last 50 years where the degradation has to be addressed one way or the other, and we can't do it by assuming that, well, for instance, the policy coming out of the Biden administration to invest in the economy and the infrastructure and job creation and new technology, all that, if it's just a matter of going back to business as usual, it's not going to work. You see?
Fair enough.
Uh-huh.
So what do you suggest?
When we were shut down last year in May, I think, and all kinds of economy came to a halt, within a week, the skies had cleared. You remember that? It was remarkable. And it had made news headlines around the world that, oh, the pollution has suddenly disappeared. How did that happen? So I want to think that it's possible that that's a goal that we aim for, that we could build up societies and cultures around not having to fly around the world and drive around in motorized cars and this direction that industrial society is taking, to where we would have a chance to change the culture and for the better and sustainably.
Well, as Lenin said in his book, What is to be Done?
Well, That's the basic gist of what I wanted to say, and we got one other thing, and now I'll be off the phone, okay? Yesterday I had a tour to go do, so I went and got on one of the buses out of my neighborhood, and had quite a few people on it. It wasn't packed, but when I got close to my stop, I rang the bell, and the bus had to turn right there. And someone else in the bus said, "Hey, what are you doing?" And that person had thought it was on a different bus, which that had to get off the same as I did. So we both got off, and I was heading my way the same way. And yeah, a person goes, "I thought it was on the number this, and it was the number that." And I was a little upset, and I said, "Well," to this person, "but look right in front of us here, there's a blossoming cherry tree. If you had got on the right bus, you would have missed it."
Uh-huh. If we just slow down and smell the cherry trees, everything will be okay, huh?
Well, if we slow down and find things that can reduce the tensions that arise, and we say, well, all is not lost, let's say, then we can get through the moment. All right, Paul.
Well, thank you, Art.
Nice talking to you.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. 503-231-8187. I'm not sure. Then there's also the opposite thing is that we need to actually go deeper into the tensions and contradictions. I can't disagree. I myself enjoyed the blossoming trees, but I certainly don't think that that's going to address the fact that we have a global industrial juggernaut that is more likely to chop up and spit out those cherry trees than anything else. Anyway, 503-231-8187 is the number to call. I wanted to pick up on one thing he said, which is the fact that it's true that like in India, that people could see the Himalaya mountains from, I don't know, like 50 miles away when they hadn't been able to for decades. I don't know if people remember reports like that that came out. And it did clear up the air in a lot of places. The problem with that is that actually some of those aerosols that are in the atmosphere are actually preventing some of the solar radiation from getting us. So actually there's a thought that despite the huge slowdown in industrial production activity and then therefore emissions due to the COVID pandemic last year, that it didn't have much effect, partly because the global dimming effect was reduced. I don't know if people know about the global dimming. I haven't talked about the whole global heating catastrophe much in the past year, partly because I don't know, it just seemed everything was just so heavy with COVID and everything else. It just seemed a little much to lay that on top. But as we come out of this, we are going to have to address these massive looming crises that are besetting us. And so, yeah, the issue of global dimming is under acknowledged, just like many of the feedback loops involved in the anthropogenic human, i.e. human-caused global heating. There's so many different intersecting feedback loops that we're barely even studying, let alone up to speed on. That's one thing. I would like to also point to another effect of COVID, which I wanted to talk about, which is the increased digitalization. The massive increase in computer and internet use that went on due to COVID-19 because people couldn't meet in person. And I think I have a feeling that this is actually increasing the already massive tendency towards increased digitalization, artificial intelligence, robotization. I think look at who benefited, Jeff Bezos increased his wealth by billions of dollars because he invented this Amazon, which is a internet-based company which delivers packages from factory to door or whatever. As a sidelight, we can talk about the blockage of the Suez Canal in terms of impacts on the fragility of the global economy. But the increase in digitalization and in computer use, I think the Zoom company must have increased its profits dramatically. I know here at KBOO, a lot of the meetings go on by Zoom now throughout, and there's other platforms. I don't want to do advertising for Zoom, but they've been indispensable to keep as Art said, keep things going, business as usual going. Of course, I think KBOO's business should keep going, because I happen to think KBOO is certainly a part of the resistance to the overall tendencies. I think we can, all of us can too easily fall into some of the same dynamics and maybe fall into some of the same illusions that we're actually really doing something to fight the global warming and other biological and the biological meltdown of the planet and general toxification of the environment. But I certainly think that if you listen to what goes on our airwaves compared to just about all the other airwaves, we are far and above in terms of actually speaking truth to power and actually trying to dig into the reality of what's going on. So obviously, and as we enter our spring membership drive tomorrow, the 1st of April, I want to encourage people to continue supporting this station. What I really want to do is encourage people to give me a call and join in this conversation, 503-231-8187. There's an article I wanted to read from a couple weeks ago. I kind of want to know where people want me to go. I could just keep going on and reading from this article about whether the coronavirus, COVID-19 virus, originated in a lab in Wuhan, which I happen to think is very interesting and very important, because it has to do with a lot of questions of the way nation states control information. The whole issue of the relationship between the United States and China, whether China is doing anything different than the United States has done, or whether they're basically just following along in kind of the blueprint that the United States set for industrial expansion, secrecy, human rights abuses, and all the rest. And if we're going to have any chance of getting out of the epidemic of global warming, if you will, we're going to have a kind of international cooperation that we've never really had. And I personally think that the way the WHO approached the COVID-19 in general and their investigation in China doesn't really bode well for the kind of openness and transparency that I think we need. But you may think differently. All of a sudden, we've got a couple callers. Let's go to Thomas. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, Paul. Good show today. When I'm listening, I'm always thinking of the root cause of a lot of these problems. And the bats and the wet market and all those questions are there to be answered. But I'm just thinking that especially the effect in our country here in the United States is a failure of capitalism and the capitalized medical system, who they don't want to prepare for outbreaks like this. They don't want to put aside the supplies or the capital that they need to deal with this, but they're sure willing to do that with the military. I mean, we build military weapons for any eventuality you can think of, and you and I are paying for them. And so this is one of the results that we get, the effect of people here, the deaths you see are not just from a bug, but from the way the system is set up. And another effect of that was pointed out by a study done by Johns Hopkins Medical School in 2016. This sounds unbelievable, but these are the numbers, that 5,000 people die every week in hospitals from preventable causes. That's 250,000 people a year, and that's going on now. okay, we've got 500,000 dead from the COVID. That's terrible. But nobody is looking at this, at these preventable deaths due to the defective medical system. And you know, this is a conservative number, because when they determine how people die, there's in most places there's nothing on there for you know, medical negligence or anything like that. They attribute the death to a disease or something like that. So unless we look, you know, more at the root, a more radical analysis of this, we're never going to fix it. Now, a country like Canada, they've got much better health outcomes, and I think part of that is because they have a universal health care system. And they're not a communist or a socialist country. You know, they're not radical crazies. They're a capitalist country, but they have this social bent that allows them to think of a bigger picture rather than just making money. And I think that focus, and that's by the whole culture here. The you know, oh yeah, Jeff Bezos, he's a bad guy. He's got billions of dollars. But that desire to grab that gold ring and for yourself pervades the whole culture, and everybody has to look at themselves, and that might help to alleviate some of these problems.
Well, for sure. I mean, yeah, I've talked about that a fair amount on the show, and obviously, if I think it was exactly this sort of almost knee-jerk, unconscious, whatever fear or you know, hatred of any kind of actual collective dealing with problems, as opposed to the myth of the, you know, the bootstrap individual, which would basically prevented them from even considering a coordinated response from the get-go. I think the pushback from the, you know, the Koch brothers and the, you know, their corporate, you know. Well, Trump himself is a child of that ideology. He's one of the prime examples of that ideology, as I've discussed on this show, going back to Norman Vincent Peale and the prosperity gospel and all that, for sure. Yeah, and so I think he himself was the worst person to be, you know, put in charge of the situation. But I'm sure he was surrounded by both you know, neoliberals and, you know, old time, robber baron type capitalists who just couldn't even imagine. They just didn't want to set an example of the federal government leading the way and invoking the name of the Industrial Production Act, that they can coordinate private industries towards the public good, like happened in the during the Great Depression, et cetera. Yeah, obviously that's, and you're saying that it's a much older and deeper story, that's basically the operating principle of our so-called healthcare system as a whole, for sure. Yeah. And of course the impact on poor people and people of color more than other people is very dramatic. You know, the stories of people, you know, African Americans in, you know, at the few public hospitals exist, getting terrible health outcomes is extreme, for sure.
You know, and you know, Obama apparently, I mean, you know, I'm not an Obama fan at all, but Obama had set up some sort of a department or organization or something where they started to do some, you know, some preparation for an outbreak like this, you know. But of course, when Trump came in, he, you know, he dismantled the whole thing. And the other thing that I don't hear is, you know, okay, if you think the vaccine is the right thing to do, then do it, you know. But in my mind, if you don't, then don't do it. And I, you know, I can't see twisting everybody's arm to do it, and that's what I see. I see them twisting everybody's arm to get the vaccine, rather than also, not only, not suggesting a cure, because right away everybody jumps on people's, you know, words and says, oh, that's not going to cure it. But look at, viruses have been around, I mean, right, for at least 100 years. I mean, right, the Spanish flu, 2018, I mean, 1918. And so people have done a lot of research, doctors, medical schools, everybody, for simple preventive, palliative, vitamins, minerals, herbs, to help to battle and fight against viruses. And these things are known to work. There have been research studies done on it, but you hear practically nothing about this at all. You know,
well,
I mean,
partly is it. Yeah, but this was such a sudden thing and so terribly new, I think, is the problem. I think people have been scrambling.
Right.
You know, I've heard of discussions of vitamin D and C being useful. But, yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, there needs to be a total reorientation of the health system towards preventative care, towards strengthening our immune systems, towards reducing stress, towards, you know, changing the environment to not help lead to. So yeah, I mean, obviously all that's true. But my personal feeling is that I think that given the nature of society in the world today, it does to me. It seems like the that and why I got the vaccination is that. It just seems like that's the only way that this thing is going to be slowed down in any kind of, you know, and you know, getting back to normal, as Art said before, is not what I'm after. So I don't know. It's a thorny subject, but I think it's not in anybody's interest for this thing to keep raging out of control. I think it's going to do more harm than good. So I think. So I'm in favor of the vaccination. I could be convinced possibly otherwise, but obviously coercion. You know, I obviously if the military, I guess, wants to, you know, to make it a condition for people to serve to get vaccinated. If private institutions want to make it a condition, I guess that's their right. I don't think it's going to go over at all trying to force the population to get vaccinated. We see what. Even just trying to get people to wear these little masks that don't do anybody any harm has done. So it's a
well, you know,
big
don't
mess.
I don't agree that it was a sudden it was a sudden thing. The COVID-19 was kind of a sudden thing, but that's my reason for pointing out that we've been fighting the flu for 100 years, and there's been a lot.
I know,
of
but COVID-19 was a
years.
Sudden thing. It did come out of. Basically nowhere. It was never.
Yeah. That one
wasn't
not,
present
not
on the planet previously. There was not any built-in immunity. Like people have some built-in immunity to, you know, it looks like the flu, the pandemic flu of 1918, sort of got, you know, naturalized into society and became one of the, you know, many regularly occurring flus, which do kill a bunch of people, but by and large doesn't have the same virulence that it did at when it first came. You know, this is like the pandemic of 1918, so we have to address it as a crisis. It's not like just the regular flu. Anyway, I got to let you go. We got another caller and other people
Thank
waiting.
You, Paul.
Thanks for calling. Thomas, and it looks like Jerry's up next. I don't know if you want to pick up on any of the threads that I've let out or talk about something else. Go ahead, Jerry.
Hi, Paul.
Hi.
Let's see. You covered most of the things that I was going to talk about. I guess the one thing I wanted to mention was, I hear your show on and off, depending on my varied schedule, but... you were talking to somebody about Trump and the election and liberalism and progressives and just, you know, politics. And at one point, I think you both agreed that maybe it would have been better had Trump, better for the left and things in the progressive side, in the future, had Trump actually won re-election.
I certainly wouldn't have agreed with that. I don't recall specifically who the guest was, but...
Oh, yeah, basically, you know, that idea that things have to get so bad before people finally wake up. But anyway, that it surprised me. I think maybe you were agreeing with the general thing the person was saying, and he had said that specifically. It was a very progressive guest or speaker or writer. I don't remember who it was, but anyway, I wanted to mention that because I was surprised that coming from you.
Well, you'd have to, I don't think that's what I said. You'd have to be much more specific about the actual context to spark my memory. But okay. I know people, callers have sort of, one particular caller who's tried to make that point, you know, over the months. And, but yeah, I don't know if you had a name that I might be able to think back,
yeah.
But no, I don't think that. I think that, I don't know, you know, the what I think of, and I think I've said this, that I think the best case scenario for a Biden would be that if it gives people a little more space to organize and to, you know, to start to build back up the, you know, not just, you know, resisting this one horrible figure as president, but to actually build back all our resistance movements, anti-capitalist, anti-globalization, anti-racism, et cetera, and then go even further to seriously challenge the Democratic Party to break free from the neoliberalism that rules it and from its corporate funders, and to actually go much further than it's ever done. That's my only real hope that I can see. I don't necessarily think we're going to get there.
Yeah. Well, I agree. I think, you know, Biden's election is just the sort of getting us back from drowning, and now we can, you know, maybe get ourselves out of the whirlpool. But let's see. What was I going to say? Yeah, the essential thing with the healthcare system. It's not really a system. It's a capitalist, you know, the rich people get great health care, and, you know, all the benefits, and, you know, the great inventions, and then, you know, the people at the bottom, sometimes they can't even get, you know, $3 worth of antibiotics to save their lives. So it's essentially, you know, the root of all evil is the pursuit of money or the love of money or whatever. That's our essential problem and still in this country and probably in the world, the capitalism and the neoliberalism. Anyway, I lost track of my other thoughts. On the COVID thing, I guess, one of the things, I think it's, some people want it to continue. I think Trump, you know, he finds out, oh, it kills more black and brown and poor people and old people, so let's just, you know, kind of weed them out, and who cares? Trump's a sociopath, so anyway.
Yeah, I guess I'm sort of morbidly curious as to whether those kind of explicit thoughts were part of it as a strategic plan, or whether, as I said earlier, it was more just a reaction against any type of a coordinated, you know, a response that would dare to look like some sort of form of socialism that was more
right
at root, which is basically what governs, as you said, our lack of an actual healthcare system, but it's more integrated into the dog-eat-dog capitalist economic system, for sure.
Yeah. Well, okay, well, thanks for your time and your great show, and I will keep listening.
All right, well, thanks for calling in, Jerry. Seem to be all men, including myself. Always encourage non-male-identified people to give a call. We only have about 6 minutes left. And we do have another caller on the line. Go ahead, Mark, you're on the air.
Good morning, Paul, and thanks for an excellent show. I want to recommend a website, globalresearch.ca, and Professor Chesedowski, who's a professor in Ottawa, has a very kind of shocking article on how the WHO actually reversed itself in January and said the lockdown has no scientific basis, that the COVID test is flawed and estimates of positive cases are meaningless. So I recommend this article. I'm very saddened by what I see as mass hysteria and the lack of any social consciousness or any commitment to enlightenment. In 2016, Vancouver built a refugee welcome center with 150 beds and language classes, integration classes. This is a great example of what we should do to create social peace, you know, to welcome people, to integrate people, to give them a place in society. Mm-hmm. And we are so slow in learning from other countries. Maybe it's because of Wall Street and the Pentagon. We have to see ourselves as a dissent society, and we have to admit that China was the only country that increased the GDP last year in 2020.
The PDP? What's PDP?
GDP, the gross domestic product.
You think right. GDP is a good thing?
No, it's not a good. It should be replaced.
But okay.
Our arrogance, our refusal to even see and learn from Canada, is so shocking.
Okay.
We desperately need partners, you know, because our system is broken, and it's one example. We need a Marshall Plan for journalism. You know, we need to revitalize democracy and public spirit, and we need affordable housing. We need to make the old post office into a village of SROs. This should be a no-brainer, right? Because
as I said earlier, what is to be done, as Lenin?
Well, this is to be done. You make a village of SROs by the old post office.
But the problem is we need those are all great ideas, and I think the continuum, the shelter to housing continuum proposal by the city of Portland is a really interesting idea. A lot of the people who are organizing these tiny house villages who are, you know, tirelessly working to organize shelters, maintain shelters, who are trying to support the houseless community, are doing wonderful work. And I think there's a lot of visionary stuff. But yeah, it's on the ground organizing and transferring, you know, the wealth from the billionaires and the millionaires to actual social
yes.
control and collective control that needs to happen. I don't know how exactly that's going to happen.
Well,
I don't know if in Portland we can kind of, you know, I don't know if taking lessons from Canada is going to be the way to show us the way forward. I think there's a lot
of
really good
examples
here in Portland. But I just want to also mention Global Research I take with a grain of salt. I think
right.
they do some really interesting stuff. I think they do some kind of wacky stuff that I'm very...
Right.
Concerned about, but I'll give you another minute, and then I got to move on.
We built myriad condominiums and boutique hotels, and so now is the time to make the poor visible and to create a village of SROs.
Okay, great.
Okay.
Well, thank you for that.
My
question is always, who are we, and how do we do it? But we're just about out of time, and I thank all my callers. I'm always a little frustrated by sort of generic plans of we should do this or this should be done or whatever. You know, basically we've kind of known for decades or centuries that the capitalist expansion model is works it only in the interests of the elites who control it. And there have been many different attempts to contrast it, including so so-called proletarian revolutions that end up being sort of co-opted and taken over by bureaucratic and egotistical interests. And that whole tidal wave of socialist, communist, you know, state-run responses is still, you know, still going on in Cuba in a much different way, but it's by and large has sort of left the world stage, and so we're left with a different scenario. You know, I don't know, is it anarchist? Is it what is it? I don't know. I guess that's a subject for another show. Didn't talk much about the Wuhan lab leak hypothesis. I think it's very interesting. I would encourage people to go to the New York Magazine from January 20-something here of January 4, 2021, written by Nicholson Baker, I'm sorry. Very interesting, amongst many other interesting things to talk about. I guess I'm all out of time to talk about stuff. I thank everybody for listening and encourage people to keep listening and supporting KBO Community Radio as we go into our spring membership drive tomorrow. Yay! See everybody.
Hold your head up. You're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. The time is 8:59 a.m.
KBOO Portland. KBOO has a number of special t-shirts we've created just for you during our month of special programming. Whether you are a metalhead, a punk rocker, a bluegrass fan, or a feminist,